Okay.
You know what that
says? We're back on 95.7 Lexington Community Radio, WLXL. This is Bluegrass Bios. Okay, coming in the second hour, we've got a special guest here. He's Dr. Alex Estrada, the chief of podiatry at the University of Kentucky Veterans Affairs Hospital. He's like, this guy comes in right out of the gate. He goes, you know, hey, 9 out of 10 on directions. Explain to me where I went wrong here. What's wrong?
All right. So you gave fairly good directions as far as to getting me here, right? And then and I have like this military mindset, you know. So it's like, okay, so come in, park.
It is
fantastic.
A straight line from where you work to here.
Negative.
These are more parking lot issues, correct? I mean,
yes.
You can't blame me for.
You said park at any spot available, and your direction would have been fair if I were to park in the back against the fence. But being that I had to circumnavigate the building,
right,
and come around the corner, which was not in your direction,
so the
directions made it sound it was more.
The duration of the, because I said keep the building on the right.
That worked. See,
okay.
That was key.
But the duration was what? It would be like if.
Well, isn't duration always?
It's like with Christopher Columbus, right? Just go that way. But, you know, then at some point, they're like, well, how long? You know?
I mean, thank God the skateboarders are there, you know.
You faced some youths?
Yeah.
They are around.
I saw some youths. What movie is that from? Oh, My Cousin Vinny.
He is
a. We have to get Lexi to do the whole Marissa Tomei stomping thing.
I think that movie came out before she was born.
Seen that movie? I would play along. But
okay, I'm sorry, I'm leaving.
Did you?
I know.
Do you know who Marissa Tomei is?
Let me Google it.
Okay, there you go. That's the millennial answer. Okay, so Alex is a jack of all trades and master of a few as well. So he's going to kind of sit in here with us. We're going to go over, let's start with this before we get too far in. Who are you?
Wow. Talk about broad.
Where you come from?
Wide aperture.
That bluegrass accent is, we're not picking it up.
Isn't that twang like just stunning?
Is
it distracting you?
the twang? Yeah, no, I would have pictured you right at home with the rodeo this weekend.
Yeah, well, I've been to many rodeos. Okay, seriously, I am...
You're a New Yorker.
Yeah, I'm from New York City metro area. I'm a Jerseyite, but I identify New York, you know, since... But, yeah, I grew up right in the shadows of Manhattan, looking out my parents' bedroom window, New York City skyline view. Kind of took it for granted, you know, my entire life, but I miss it now. But yeah, born and raised in the shadows of New York City, went to school in New York, partied in New York, worked in New York, and I ended up here because of work about 4 years ago.
Now, what do you think about Lexington as compared to, you know, Manhattan?
I mean,
the city, not me.
Right. Well,
wow.
That could have gone wrong. Really
wow. Wait, hold on. Look at my. Hold on. Let me catch my breath.
She's a lot more shrill in person.
But, Lexington, the geographic location.
Yes, the municipality.
Yeah, it's a fun place. It actually is a fairly decent hybrid as far as having, big city-ish kind of feel as well as a, country-ish feel in the sense that, you know, you drive 15 minutes out of town and you're in the country, you know. And it still has enough of a... urban vibe, and I think the whole college scene helps that. It doesn't have it's not a bustling metropolis. It doesn't have a vibrant downtown, but for Kentucky standards, I guess it's vibrant enough. Back home, there was a small city called Hoboken, Hoboken, New Jersey. It's where Frank Sinatra was born, and that's where baseball was born. Those are your two trivia tidbits. But it's a mile square city.
Write that down, Lex.
At one point, it was, and correct me if I'm wrong, Lexington might need to Google this.
I got you.
It was the town with the most bars per capita in the United States. So something to that effect. Anyway, it's a mile square town. So the that town, it's very, it reminds me, downtown Lexington reminds me very much of that that neighborhood, just for, because of the social scene, the bars, the kind of the young artsy kind of up and coming kind of environment. So that was, that helped ease a transition a lot.
What's the what's the business there that's the result of so many bars per capita? And that's got to be an old...
There's a train station that goes right into Lower Manhattan, Wall Street. So, essentially, Hoboken used to be a dump. I mean, it used to be very, very not a friendly, not very good neighborhood. And essentially, you had all the people in New York City, all the stockbrokers, all the yuppies, you know, quote-unquote. I despise that term, but whatever. They either could not afford New York City prices, or they refused to pay New York City prices, or New York City just kind of started running out of room. So a literal 10-minute subway ride, and you're in New Jersey, where initially everything was a fraction of the cost of New York City. Now Hoboken is and Southern Hudson County is on par with New York City prices.
Alex, you're Cuban American, correct?
I am.
And
first generation.
Okay, first generation. So when and how did your parents get to the East Coast?
My parents' story, it's kind of cute. It's kind of like a reverse Cinderella story. My dad worked in the farms. He was a farmer, came from long family farmers, eventually became a butcher. Because they had livestock farming, and my mom was from a pretty affluent family in Havana, where they all had college educations, they all went to private schools and whatnot, and so essentially when the Batista regime collapsed in the late 50s and the Castro regime took over, my mother's family was able to afford to just get up and leave. So, you know, once that went down, they up and left, and they went to Spain. Whereas my father could not afford to leave, and when he declared that he was not going to join the party or the movement, they said, well, you have to either join the movement, go to prison, or leave the country. So I said, okay, I'll leave the country. So they said, well, if you want to leave the country, then you have to work at a you have to work for the government first before you can leave the country. So then they made him work cutting sugarcane for, like, I don't know how long. And then they allowed him to leave to Spain. So my parents met up at a bar in Spain. And
wow,
they lived happily ever after.
Do you get to? Is your only choice, you know, Spain? Or can you throw a dart at a map or something?
At the time, there was the country, the Cuban government would assign where you were allowed to leave to.
Okay.
Then later on, if I'm not mistaken, there was some sort of a lottery as to where you were allowed to leave to. Very few people were allowed to leave, excuse me, straight to the U.S. It was mostly Latin American countries. But out of all of them, Spain was the best one to leave to. Even though conceptually at the time, it was leaving one fascist dictatorship. Well, Cuba was a communist dictatorship,
right.
But it was leaving a communist dictatorship to a fascist dictatorship under Franco. But it was still the lesser of two evils, for lack of a better term.
Now, that's not Generalissimo Franco, is it?
Yes, it is.
That's Generalissimo Francisco.
Yeah, Francisco Franco. Yes.
Okay. And he's, my understanding is still dead, yes.
He's still dead.
Okay, good. Yeah. Both of these two are too young to get that. Right. I think that joke's exclusively for my dad, if he's listening.
Well, I had to think about it for a second there. I'm like, for Generalissimo. I just knew him as you know, as Franco. You know, it's one of those ubiquitous last, you know, one of those infamous last names where, you know.
This is WLXL LPFM Lexington Community Radio. How are you going to tell me to do the ID and the legal and then rip the mic away and continue the conversation? How do you feel about that?
I'm totally okay with that.
Oh, wait, we have to do my legal disclaimer.
Sure. Okay, yeah.
The views represented by Dr. Estrada do not represent the Department of Defense, Department of Veterans Affairs, or any other organization he may be affiliated with. Okay.
His views may not even necessarily represent himself. So let's keep that in mind. Okay, so your mother gets to leave Cuba with the wealth that her family had accumulated, because I thought
you leave with what you could carry, basically,
right?
Because their property and all that became the government's.
They both start over when they get to Spain,
right? So they both over when they get to Spain. My mom just had a little bit more to start over with.
Gotcha.
my uncle, actually, he stayed behind. He was the last one to leave because he was with the Cuban Air Force, so he worked for the Cuban government, and he basically. In order to facilitate his family leaving, he just made believe, like, he disowned them. He was just like, those bastards, those traitors.
Yeah.
I'm staying here with my cush government job. So once everybody was out of the country, my uncle actually defected to the U.S.
In what kind of circumstance? Because that's some...
All he says, it involved a MiG, and he's not allowed to talk about the rest.
Wow. Got Dr. Alex Estrada in studio with us, telling us stories, regaling us as you would. So, okay, what kind of so at some point your parents, because you're not born in Spain. They
just... I was conceived in Spain.
Oh, okay.
We don't have to talk about that on air.
Hang on.
It's like pickles. They're bottled one way and they're consumed somewhere else.
Lexington loves that comparison.
So you came to America. How's that? What was that like?
Well, okay, so I'll tell you a funny story. This is actually very good because it involves Alex's family history. It involves Alex's personal history, and there's some medicine involved too. So this is good. You guys know,
okay. Covering all the bases.
Oh yeah, this is gonna be. It's a quick one. I won't eat up your time or bore anybody else. But okay, so my mom's pregnant, right? So she's pregnant. My dad now has a friend in the U.S. that says, "Hey, you know, come on over." And I believe they still. Do this with immigration where if someone sponsors you, mm-hmm. you know, it's easier to come or something to that effect. So my dad had a friend. He said, hey, look, you know, come on over. I'll sponsor you. I'll get you a job, whatever. And my father was like, well, no, I have, you know, this woman here, which I impregnated. Whoopsies, my bad. And and I'm responsible for her now. So my dad and my mom obviously weren't married at the time, but he was like, look, I'm not abandoning you. I'm going to take care of you. I'm just going to go to U.S. first and set things up, and then I'll bring you over. And if the kid's born before then, oh, well, I'll bring both of you over. If not, you come over on your own. You have the kid in the States. Fine. So my dad comes over, gets a job. My mom's getting, you know, larger and larger with child. And my dad calls her up one day and says, hey, come on over. And she's like, well, I'm not allowed to fly. I'm 8 months pregnant. They won't let me fly anymore. So he's like, well, you know, I, what do you do? You know? So she's like, okay, I'm going. So, my mom, in her infinite wisdom with her eight month pregnant belly,
yeah,
puts on a girdle and squeezes the heck out of that belly. Yeah. And myself included. So yeah, it was you know, kind of cramped quarters. So she gets on the airplane. So her logic is, I'm only gonna wear it for an hour or two, get on the plane, it's not gonna hurt the baby. Not a very wise choice in retrospect, but she gets on the plane. It's an Iberia airliner. She plane takes off, and I believe international law still stands. If a kid is born on an airplane over international waters, they have dual citizenship, right? The parents' citizenship and or the citizenship of the airliner that they're flying in.
Wow.
As an option. Now, I do not know if this is, you know, I have not verified this.
Right.
But so planes over the Atlantic. My mom's like, all right, girdle comes off. Hey, I'm pregnant. You can't kick me off now. So at which point she says that there was quite a commotion on the airplane. Mind you, this is 1974. You know?
Right.
And, you know, the whole, is there a doctor on board, you know, that they went through all that and whatever. So, so plane landed, I was born 3 days later.
Wow.
And that's why I have cerebral palsy. So for those of you who don't know me, I walk a little funny. That's because of the, that whole, it's, we theorize that whole, you know, placing herself in a girdle thing to squeeze her belly and make her not look pregnant, caused some oxygen deprivation to my brain, and that's why I have cerebral palsy and I walk funny. So, but yeah, it's
how was that? What was that like growing up?
It sucked.
Yeah.
I literally stopped counting at 21 as far as operations, just so I could walk. I didn't start walking until I was about 6 or 7. And that was tough, but I think it made me resilient, to where I am today. I mean, I would not be a physician specializing in low extremities if it wasn't for that experience. And the next question that people ask, rightfully so, is, well, are you upset at your mom? Right. Cause you could easily try and lay blame. No, she meant well. She's trying to, think of the best situation for her family, for me. She wanted to be, it's a love story,
Yeah.
They met in Spain. She wanted to be with the lover for life, So I get it, So yeah, my sore, nah, I'm not really. But, So I've been very blessed in that sense. I most kids with cerebral palsy have some degree of mental retardation. Most are in a wheelchair, can't walk, use crutches to walk. And so I walk funny. Who cares? No big deal.
Yeah. So it just affects your legs.
Right.
That's it. Okay. Right. And you were telling us before we came on the air that you're going to get injected with botulism.
Yes. It's a medication called it's Botox. Right. It's what they're getting in Hollywood, or not in Hollywood, some prominent Lexingtonians sure are familiar with getting Botox in their eyes and stuff.
Getting all those crow's feet out.
Right. What it does is it relaxes. It's a muscle relaxant.
Right.
So it actually is botulism toxin.
Right.
Botulism A, actually. And it's a paralytic agent.
Yeah, I mean that's what's in the teeth of those Komodo dragons, right? Like this is a toxic chemical.
Yeah, it is. So and you have to sign a disclaimer. Hey, we're putting it into your muscle. As long as it gets in your muscle, it's fine. If we get it into a vein, oh well, whoopsies, you might have some issues. And because of the degree of spasticity of tightness in my legs, I have to get pretty much the toxic dose. So it's 800 units into each leg.
Oh,
so we're, I just got evaluated for that today. So, the neurologist I saw was very, excited. She said it will get me almost to normal. So, there is a catch. I mean, the catch is that it's only good for 90 days. So I have to go back every 90 days, get the certain muscles in my legs injected. And, it's only a temporary fix.
Okay. So and you're going to, not have discomfort. This is kind of like a long-term temporary, I guess.
Once you do it, if you get the results you like, if you get the results you want, it then turns into a whole maintenance thing. Yeah.
Okay. So can you tell us about, how old were you when you were working in Giant Stadium?
Those are the Harry M. Steven days. That was my first job out of high school, probably summer of 92. And it was summer. What's funny about that?
Yeah, I wasn't bored yet. You wasn't bored yet. Sorry.
I love it.
I love the there's no shame in that. It's like, you're old.
You know what I found beautiful about this room right now? There's 3 decades represented in this room.
Yeah.
Right. So we're all about 10 years apart from each other. So that's pretty impressive. I mean, the 70s, 80s, 90s represented. You're right. So that's
well, impressive. You and Ben are the same age. Correct?
Yeah. We now outnumber them. Let's be nice.
All right. Well, do you feel, I could sense the confidence. You're glowing right now.
I'm very happy about that. Yeah.
We usually just talk about emojis in here.
I had to tell them what Back to the Future was the other day.
No, sacrilege. Yeah, yes, oh my god,
yes. Is that true? Happen?
It might have been.
Do you know where DeLorean is, Lexington?
It's the car that's in the Back to the Future.
Good. All right. Very all right. Good.
There we go. We learn around here.
All right.
This is a learning environment. Okay.
See, John DeLorean. He's a guy that meant well, but yeah. But screwed up. He meant well. So what? He was trafficking cocaine in the cars. He was just trying to save his company.
Yeah.
He didn't mean no harm.
No. It didn't work. He got caught too.
Isn't that the thing with crime? It's only crime if you get caught. Isn't that what they say?
A little bit, yeah. Well, right. That's.
I don't.
Semantic argument.
Right. Yeah. I don't.
Advocating crime.
I'm not advocating crime. I'm advocating not getting caught.
Lexington. Huntington's exasperated. And
so speaking of crime.
Moving forward.
Speaking of crime, you worked at the Meadowlands.
It's, you know, Jimmy Hoffa, the it's North End Zone, right?
Rumor. Yeah, yeah.
It was actually, it was the summer of 92. And I don't remember, we might need to Google this, but when the first World Trade Center bombing was.
That was 93
It was 93. So, yeah, okay. Yeah. So that further explains the lack of security. Actually, you're right, because I was probably sophomore in college when that happened. Because I remember I remember my chemistry teacher being all spazzed out about it.
Yeah, that was a big deal. But then it was Oklahoma City.
Then it was
everybody started to take things a little more seriously.
And at the time in college, when I was having my identity and career crisis, I wasn't sure if I wanted to go into forensics, I wanted to be a psychologist. So I was taking a forensics class at the time, and the professor was a chemistry professor, and that's how that's what brought the flash, the memory.
Where'd you go to school?
New Jersey City University.
Oh, okay.
Small state school.
Is it good?
It was. Yeah. It is now. I mean, it was the first. It was the first year of the university when I was there.
Oh, wow.
Before that was Jersey City State College in beautiful Jersey City, New Jersey, where we had metal detectors at the front and back gate, and armed police on campus. But anyway, just back to close the loop on the giant stadium job.
Yeah.
It was before all these events, so security is very lax. So a friend of mine said, hey, you know, my brother's working at the stadium, it's a cush job, just walk in and they'll give you a job. I'm like, okay. I drove up to the stadium gate. You know, here's a stadium that holds 55,000 people. You know,
not do that now.
Drove up to the gate, I walked down the tunnel, I was, you know, they said look for the Harry M. Stephen offices. I was completely lost. I ended up in the locker room. I ended up on the field. Sadly, there was no, you know, cell phone cameras. I would have been, would have made for a fantastic, epic selfie.
Yeah.
You know, but So I worked at Giant Stadium. I started off boiling hot dogs in the back room of a concession back room of a concession stand.
Oh, you're the guy back there.
I was the guy back there. I was a guy back there, and it was like this huge sink with a gas flame under it.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And it was like, and it was so disgusting. You get tap water, you plug up the sink with a rubber plug, fill it up with tap water, turn the boiler on, boil the water, and just throw in hot dogs. And like for a 12-hour shift, it was the same water we boil the hot dogs in. It was horrible.
Does the boiling of the water sanitize it a little bit?
Medically, I would think, right? But anyway,
did people get sick all the time at the stadium?
I don't know. I never checked. Yeah. Nobody complained to me. So I started boiling hot dogs. Then I became a concession stand supervisor, and I was moving up in the world. Then somebody said, "Hey, why don't you be a cashier?" Mm. I'm like, "No, why would I want to be a cashier? Because concession stand supervisor." I'm like, "No, because cashiers handle all the money, they get tipped, and they make a little bit more money." I'm like, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I was a cashier, and that was great because I was sitting down in a heated booth, you know, whatever. And then I moved on to be a beer salesman. That was fun. I mean, it was just fun. From beer salesman, I moved on to be a bartender at Giant Stadium. And back then, you know, you start off at the stadium, and if you're really good, they'll give you a break and, you know, have you work over at the arena. At the Meadowlands Arena where the Devils and the Nets played.
Oh, okay.
And then if you're really, really good, you got to put on like this tux with a clip-on tie and you worked at the racetrack, which is all in the complex.
Okay.
So, but by then I was already, I mean, I worked through college there. It was a fun job. It was a great job for a college student. I saw all these concerts for free. I lost interest in sports, though. That's the catch, because now sports became a job. So I didn't care if the Giants or Jets won or lost. But anyway, then I got into medical school, and then poof, done. I didn't have time to.
Where'd you go to medical school?
New York College of Podiatric Medicine. We're affiliated with Columbia. With Columbia and NYU.
Yeah, yeah. And so, how'd you end up? How do you get from Columbia to Lexington, Kentucky?
In
five words or less.
Five words or less. That's tough. To make a long story short,
as long as you like.
We need to have some more material for you. I can assure myself back on here. You know, this is way too much fun.
But, so let's sort of step away from biographical for a little bit. We'll re-scratch that lottery ticket at another time,
or that scab. Depends how you want it.
As it were. Let's just talking about Cuba, right? I know you have some feelings about the relations. What would we call it? Diplomatic relations.
Sure.
Lift of the embargo over there.
Well, it hasn't formally been lifted, but I mean, it's obviously things are headed in that direction.
Right.
I see the pros and cons. I see the arguments on either side of the fence regarding the embargo issue. The thing is, like, you know, for younger generations, yeah, the embargo doesn't make sense, and I get it. Okay, it's more of a pride and ego thing for the U.S. You know, but for the older generations, for example, I just called myself older. Great, mm-hmm. as Lexington's smiling there, very. Gleefully.
I didn't say it.
She's getting younger before our eyes.
But, it was like, what's that TV show? Mork and Mindy. Yeah. Where as you age, you become more infantile. You could be like 100 years old and it's like a baby. Anyway, I only brought that up because Kyle mentioned Lexington aging before our eyes. But, you know, reverse aging. It's okay. I live vicariously through you.
Anyway. That works.
She is the soul of the show.
Moving forward. Gosh. But yeah, my generation and back, it's a severe point of contention because, you know, here's my family. And okay, because of this whole thing, you know, my parents met. And if it wouldn't have been for that, I wouldn't have been born. But here's like my family that had their possessions, their property taken away from them. You know, scores of people, you know, were put to death by firing squad, you know, because of this revolution and whatnot. And now we're going to be buddy-buddy with these people. So,
yeah. And is it that there are so many Cuban exiles in the United States as opposed to Chinese exiles or Russian exiles?
Well, I mean, it's no secret Cuban immigrants have had preferential treatment from the onset as compared to any other immigrant. I mean, and that came out of the Kennedy administration, mm-hmm. right? And part of that is the whole wet foot, dry foot policy, which I don't think any other country has, which basically, in a nutshell, states, you know, if your foot's dry, if your foot's on land, hey, mm-hmm. you know, you get a free ride. If your foot's wet, if you haven't made it to land, well, you get, you know, deported back like all the other immigrants. Mm-hmm. No other immigrants, you know, get that privilege, for lack of a better term. And Cubans always had a somewhat of a streamlined naturalization process, okay. as compared mm-hmm. to others. And it was essentially because of that whole, you know, communist country only 90 miles away. Mm. We have to help these people get out. And that was part of the, you know, the genesis of that.
So do a lot of the people who landed here from Cuba, they're not really enthusiastic about lifting the embargo? Or would
the Cuban generation, you know, my generation back, they're not, because they want to see this country held, you know, this regime held accountable. Yeah. You know, one could dispute, hey, you know, maybe they'd be more open to it if it was a different regime, but it's still the Castro family.
Yeah.
That's still in power. So that I think is what makes the whole thing more so contentious.
But their children and maybe their grandchildren, maybe a little lighter.
They're all progressive. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's as with anything else. You know, the younger the generation is, regardless of, you know, where they're from, the more progressive they're going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And historically, it's the same thing. Progressivism is, you know, tends to ally itself with the youth.
Are your parents still alive?
Yes.
And how do they feel about it when they talk to you about it?
Well, they are. They're not as bitter about it as I am, only because, for example, my father, coming from a family of farmers, they were able to play the system. So my mother's family, where they had everything taken from them, they're going to be a little bit more bitter about it, okay? Because they, being from, you know, more of a white collar background, they're upset. The farmers, well, yeah, you know, the government owns my farm. Okay, so what? We still live on it. We still till the fields. We still have our livestock. So they see it as the government owning the farm in name only. You know, and then they learned how to play the politics game where if some general was visiting town, hey, let's have a feast, let's have a big party, let's kill a hog, and that's, you know, whatever. And, you know, did they really do that because they were supporting the regime? No, they were just playing politics, you know. And because they did that and because they were more in the interior of the country, they're a little bit more insulated. You know, the people in the big city, there's no food, there's no medicine, there's no, you know, the infrastructure's falling apart, right? You feel it a lot more. Right, you know, those on the farm. Well, if you cook your own food, if you grow your own food, if you know, if you get water from the river, if you have, you know, you're insulated from all that. So you still feel it, but certainly not as hard as, you know, city folks.
Yeah, sort of up in the air there. Hang on, that's okay. That's okay.
Okay, so terrific.
I guess the question is: do you feel like you need to carry the mantle of that for your parents?
I mean, I suppose philosophically, yes, but I'm not going to go to blows about it. I'm not going to get into a shouting match, you know, with someone about it. I'm not going to, you know, be a what do you call that? You know, I'm not going to be a social activist about it. You know, I want to express my views, share them, you know, and you know, what will happen will happen. I think certain you know, if you look at concepts like chaos theory, you know, and systems theory, you know, once you inject energy into a system and things are put into motion, it's kind of hard to avoid either entropy or the system to fall into its next steady state. So I think with the Cuba situation, I think things have been set into motion, both with the, you know, the chronic nature of the embargo and what's happening now, that it has to end at some point.
Are you in communication with anybody who lives in Cuba at the moment?
I am not. My father is. I have pretty much all of my father's family, except for a couple of cousins, stayed in the country.
I know. I personally would love it if the embargo was lifted and I got to, you know, travel back and forth to Cuba and got the cigars. But how do they feel about us coming over there?
They love us going over there because they don't care. Okay. They don't care about you. They care about the almighty dollar in your wallet.
Oh, very.
You
good.
Know. So, like my dad, and I forgot how he's, you know, circumnavigated the system, but there was a point where my dad was going once a year, twice a year to Cuba. I'm sorry, and sometimes he did it through legal manners. Sometimes he did it through, you know, some, you know, creative travel plans.
Yeah. So, have you ever been yourself?
I have not. Oh, I have not. Okay. It's been tough for me because you know, part of it is I'm an American citizen.
Yeah.
You know, and secondarily, ever since 2002, I've been a federal employee. So you're kind of held to a different standard, and I get it. I understand.
Will you? Do you plan to?
Absolutely. I'd love to go. I mean, Cuba. I mean, and yeah, I have a biased perspective, but they say it's the most beautiful island in the Caribbean. So, you know, I definitely want to experience that. I want to see the beaches, you know, my mom grew up at. I want to see, you know, even though my dad lived in the country, there's evidently a beach not far from where the family farm was, where, you know, he'd go swimming when he was a kid. I want to see that. I want to experience that. I never got to meet my paternal grandparents, you know, and just to know that I have cousins, uncles that I've never met, uncles that have died. It's like, you know what? I want to see that, you know, I want to meet these people. I want to experience these things.
Go ahead. Sorry, Alex.
How important is it for you to bring your kids and future generations and carry on that tradition and that heritage?
Yeah. I mean, I'm all for student groups going over there for sure. I mean, obviously my kids, you know, without a doubt. But there are American student groups that go and have been going to Cuba. That's one of the permitted travel reasons. Mm-hmm. If you're a school group, I don't know how they do it. But basically, Cuba is a very culturally rich and diverse country, you know? There's all ethnicities in Cuba, even though they're all Cubans, you know. You know, Cuba, you know, for example, my sister is blonde hair, blue eyed, you know. And, you know, yet my grandfather on my father's side, you know, on my mother's side, my grandfather is, you know, African American. He's, well, you know, African Latin American or whatever. I don't know what the PC term is.
Black, but, I think. I think we're back to black.
We are? Okay. It's safe to say that. I wasn't sure if it's safe to say.
Let me check the internet.
But, no, you know, my sister, blonde hair, blue eyed. You know, my grandfather, you know, black because he has slave blood in him. You know, so you have European blood in Cuba. You have African blood in Cuba. So there's a lot. It's a very culturally rich country.
So we're going to go to break here in a second. But so you would say sort of you're intellectually kind of philosophically curious, but there's you still. I don't know. How would you say it? Your spidey senses maybe still tingling a little bit. Is that fair to say?
Yes, especially with the Castro regime still in control. Because you hear about, you know, American citizens getting, you know, arrested in China and whatnot. And conceptually, the same thing happens in Cuba. We just don't hear about it because it's not as prominently on the media. So personally, as an American, I'd feel uncomfortable going. Until, you know, there's some change. And who knows, maybe, you know, just as though there was an Arab Spring in the Middle East, well, maybe there's going to be a Cuban Spring. Who knows, you know? Or maybe the family will just, you know, relinquish power. I doubt it. But, you know,
do you think this kind of sponsorship from the U.S. makes that more or less likely? Because they've got to feel vindicated at this point, right? Castro regime, like, hey, we waited them out.
And that's exactly the attitude. You know, for example, you know, the face of Cuban politics now is Castro's little brother, Raul, which met, you know, with the president and with Secretary of State Kerry, and played the politics game, you know, and all smiles and shaking hands and hugs and, you know, whatever. But yet Castro, which is bedridden because he's so ill, the day after President Obama left Cuba, you know, he put out this scathing anti-American op-ed, basically stating that, yeah, we waited them out, and now, you know, what do they call us? The imperialist capitalist American pigs came and are now begging for our economic assistance, and they just want us because Cuba's so economically prosperous or has a potential to help their economy so much, and so on and so forth. I mean, you know, forget the fact that they're countries in disarray, infrastructure-wise and economically, you know. But that's the rhetoric, and that's the rhetoric that they've been feeding their citizens for so many years, and it's kind of a slap in the face to us because, you know, I think the president, I think he meant well, you know, and I may not agree with the politics, I may not agree with, you know, but I think it was well intended, and I'm you know, I'm not going to dispute that, but you know, it's a slap in the face when they come out with that again.
Right, we're going to take a quick break. This is Lexington Community Radio. We're going to tase Lexington Sours, or pull the cat out of her or something.
What?
Whatever. Whatever keeps her from Snapchatting over there.
I'm not Snapchatting.
We'll be right back.
All right, we are back with Bluegrass Bias. So,
Buongiorno, spero che tutto stia bene.
That's Italian.
Say.
Ciao.
All right, we're going Bellissimo. Bilingual today. And
SpaghettiOs.
Estamos con la tuta bella donna e Lexington. Do we have an Italian contingent? Maybe.
Maybe. We'll go with it.
I mean, you know.
Like Italian. On the planet, or what do you mean?
I mean,
like in our audience.
I'm just showing off because chicks like languages.
Oh, okay.
They can call in.
Yeah.
All right.
Wait, hold on. Let me Snapchat Lexington.
All right. We'll give out the number to go into this just in case somebody wants to throw out. Hey, how about we do it like this way? We'll start a fresh segment here called Ask Dr. Alex.
Wow.
We'll have to get some imaging for that. But the number is 859-721-5699. If you want to come in and pick this man's brain, because he is a jack of many trades and a master of a few, too. So if you've got some podiatry questions.
Kyle, you're really being generous with your you know, affirmations here.
I tend to be.
Well, I'm feeling really good about myself right now.
I am. One of the rules of radio is you're supposed to under promise and over deliver. I've gone way far in the other direction on that one.
Now I have to live up to this. I'm feeling a little bit stressed.
So
I could do this.
I wanted to come back and talk about a serious topic that you and Lexington were discussing, Snapchat.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about how we had been discussing deciding your future and, you know, when it's right to change that. But let's pick Snapchat. That's.
Well, yeah, I mean, what's more important?
Well, isn't Snapchat part of everyone's future? It's the number one social media outlet right now. It actually surpassed Facebook, per an article I read recently.
Yeah, I'm too old, I think, for Snapchat.
You're never too old for Snapchat.
No, you're not too old for Snapchat.
I'm on Snapchat.
Okay, so why are you on Snapchat?
Well, because you know, chicks are into Snapchat, so I just go with the crowd.
You've come to the heart of it.
In all seriousness, the reason why I'm on Snapchat is because, well, like, for example, like, let's say we're on it, right? And whatever, I see something cool. I take a picture of it. I send you the snap. You see it. Okay, well, cool. Poof, it's gone. It's not like I have to take up memory on my phone because I want to take a picture of a car that I saw or whatever, you know?
Now, so does this combine, like, Messenger and Instagram? Is this why Snapchat is big?
Ben, do you not know what Snapchat is?
Of course I know what it is. I said, why is it big?
Okay, all right, sorry.
Well, I mean, you know,
because it combines those two things.
It's speculated that it was designed with the whole, you know, sexting in mind kind of a thing. And yeah, it could be used for that nefarious purpose. But, I mean, I don't think so. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and say, hey, yeah, this is a great, you know, texting and photo sharing, you know, media without having to use up memory on your phone.
And that... So messaging does that, like texting does that, and
right.
Uses up memory.
It does.
Instagram is really just here's a picture.
I don't know because I'm not on Instagram.
And then Messenger is just texting.
Just messaging.
Yeah.
Let's play a game called Ask a Millennial. How do you rank the social media platforms at this juncture, Lex?
I mean, I think it depends a lot on your personality and what you like. I would go Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, Facebook, but some people might exchange the Twitter.
Now, why do you like Twitter? Because I can't. It's just
I can't stand it. I can't stand it.
So much stuff. Like even if you follow five people,
because
that's a massive amount of stuff.
You get the information you need in 140 characters or less, so it's real quick. You get links. There's...
Well, now, what information do you get from Twitter that you couldn't get from somewhere else that's, like, unique to Twitter?
Well, it's current news or breaking news or something that immediately that's going on at that moment in a way that you don't have to read the whole news article. It helps with the millennials that now have
millennial ADD...
Right,
syndrome.
Right. It's also really nice because I follow a lot of news agencies and they have a paywall. So if you follow them on Twitter, there's no
for
paywall.
You, this is kind of like a wire service would used
exactly.
to be in the old.
Yes.
Very old days.
In the very old days.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
sometimes,
even before my time and in yours.
Is there such a thing?
Is it before my time? Oh, yeah.
Sometimes people are funny. I'm never funny. I think I am, but I'm not. So it's nice to see a cute
little
story.
You're fairly entertaining.
Gosh.
I mean,
entertaining and funny.
I mean, it's certainly a whole lot more so when we throw a few margaritas at you, but you're entertaining.
No. She's nice.
She's always nice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, nice is better than funny.
I mean,
mean, horrible people.
I mean, she's not like, you know, catty, but, you know. She's female, so the potential is there. Wait, was that too sexist of a statement?
No, I'll temper that. I'll say that I can do that sometimes too. Don't make me. I can be catty myself and snarky, so we don't want to do that.
What does it take to trigger you?
Oh,
what if like I threw my bottle of water at you? Would that do it?
Yeah, that would probably do it. That would especially do it because we've got the board and the computer and the CD players.
No, but then we would lose our feed, that would be bad.
Yeah, that's not me.
All right.
So yeah. If something that goes beyond just insulting me and into a broad swath of people.
Oh.
Yeah, that would.
Gotcha.
That would tick me off.
I wouldn't care.
Or my friends or family or parents or stuff like that. Don't say it. Don't say anything about my mother.
I was,
is what I'm saying.
So it's kind of like the Donald Trump and Cruz disparaging
Donald,
his wife.
Yeah,
and
Donald Trump only takes offense with what people say about Donald Trump.
I think. Why do I open my mouth? Why'd I go down this rabbit hole? There's actually a great video I saw on Facebook, and it was something about Donald Trump supporters or something, and they had miniature Donald Trump banners, and they would stick them in dog poops and take the picture.
Oh, my.
It was hysterical. It was the funniest thing ever. It doesn't matter if you like the guy or dislike him or whatever, but it was pretty funny. I mean,
is funny, and a good joke is a good visual joke.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of hard over radio. Oh, here we go. This the thing. What I'm showing everybody in the studio is a picture I took of a billboard on the subway. And Kyle had mentioned, pick Dr. Strada's brain or ask Dr. Strada anything.
Okay.
So there's – go ahead. You describe it, Kyle.
Okay. I'll use my my power of verbal skills. The doctor will see you now is what it says. And there's a picture of an adolescent male taking a picture with his underwear pulled out down into his pants. It says, share photos with a doctor, get diagnosed. So that's kind of cool. Is that really a thing?
I mean, So one of the many hats I wear is I'm in charge of telehealth, right? Telemedicine. It's basically a Skyped doctor's visit, right? But this is different. I mean, this is New York City subway billboard, and I think the implication here is, hey, somebody thinks that they got an STD or something, and they're taking a picture of their privates and sending it to the doctor, saying, hey, is this really the clap or something? And Wait, is that? Do you know what the clap is?
Yes.
I don't know what the nouveau term is.
Is WebMD the scourge of the medical community?
I despise it. I mean, one thing, I'm all for people being educated, but don't walk into my office thinking that you know more than me. And that's not me being on my, I'm on my soapbox. I'm holier than thou. I know more than thou. But. If you're coming in telling me, hey, doc, this is what I got. This is what's wrong with me. Well, what's the point of me then? Why are you here? And I love it because 90% of the time they're completely wrong, So and I'm not saying that to belittle people, but it's okay for you to use that as a resource after seeing the doctor.
Right.
If the doctor didn't explain something well enough or if the doctor used a word, mm-hmm. fine. But I don't agree with people, coming into the office saying, hey,
this is my diagnosis.
Hey,
now,
do. I have fibromyalgia. Oh, really?
That's specific.
It's like, well, why do you think you have fibromyalgia? Oh, well, because I have
malaise.
Because I have 42 of the 176 symptoms. Wow.
Would you take offense to somebody saying their symptoms to you and then maybe taking a guess at what they have? Do you not even like that?
No, I don't have. It all depends on the person's attitude. If they come in and they're closed-minded and they're kind of, really, then if you know at all, why are you coming to the doctor? So I had one come to the office recently, and this person was discussing with me what kind of brace they needed for their leg. And I said, okay, well, that's not what you need. This is the kind of brace you need. Mm-hmm. Like, no, that's not going to work. Really? Where did you get your biomechanical training from? Do you have a degree in prosthetics? It's how many braces have you constructed? Oh, none. Okay, because guess what? When I was in school and when I was in practice, we had to fabricate braces. So and that's the beauty of podiatry school, for example. We fabricate braces before and now we prescribe braces, but because part of the schooling was fabrication of the device, you have an intimate knowledge of what goes into it. And what device is indicated or over another.
Now, usually when I go to the doctors, I've got a list of questions I want to be sure I ask. How do you? How
and
do you
and
feel?
I love it. I love it.
You like the list.
I love it. I love because it because I'm there to address your needs and to help you. You know, so if you come to me with a list, I'm like, okay, perfect.
Oh,
now,
really?
I hopefully it's not a laundry list of things, and you're gonna eat up the time because we have a very limited amount of time together. But that's good, you know, because and it's happened to me. You know, it's I've come out of the doctor's office. Oh, I forgot to mention.
Yeah.
Whatever. So
because I've gone to a few doctors and I take out the list, 4 or 5 questions, and you can just see them scowl and go, oh boy, that's. The list. Well, here's somebody. Where'd you get that list from? The internet or something?
One thing is,
it's usually when I switch doctors.
Right. Well, one thing is if you have a list of issues or concern that you need addressed.
Yeah.
Another thing, you know, is I think the doctors tend to preemptively fear. Oh boy, this guy did his own research and he's coming to me with a list of differential diagnoses and that might be unpalatable to the doctor. But I encourage my patients to make lists.
Yeah, mine's usually symptoms,
aggravating factors. What I tell my people to make a list of, and I recommend family members or whatever, is just, make a quick list. Let's say you have 10 things that you think are wrong with you. Well, narrow it down to, the top 3, top 4, right? Symptoms, aggravating factors, alleviating factors.
If you can combine some of those things, it
depends. It's all relative, I guess. But symptoms, aggravating factors, alleviating factors. Well, my big toe hurts when I run. It stops hurting when I rest, and it feels good when my partner massages it. Whatever.
Yeah. What's the most common symptom or complaint people come to you with?
Heel pain. Heel pain is
How come?
Lexington, are you okay there? You're making faces.
I really don't like feet.
Really?
More power to you, man. Talked about foot massages and that. Ooh, that's gross.
So you don't like foot massages?
That's gross.
No.
Really?
No.
Do you get pedicures?
Yes, but it's a very painful experience.
Very. Oh, I see.
Painful or nauseating or literally painful?
I mean, sometimes, I just don't like them down there.
You don't like anybody down there?
No.
Really? Okay.
No foot massages for Lexington?
No, none.
Okay.
Where does the
no dates from? With Tony Rakihara?
No,
I don't know what that is, but no.
You don't know Tony Rakihara.
And Antoine Rakamura.
Antoine Rakamura. That's what it was. He had a speech impediment. Poor guy.
Yeah. Well, we all know how that happened.
Yeah.
Wait, but what about Oscar Pistorius then?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh at that. But...
No, because he's got blades, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's still not just
and in prison.
That might be the bigger thing.
I feel bad for laughing at that, but I found that entertaining.
Yeah, it was meant to be. <It's so good. laughs> Wait, so will you not wear sandals? So you don't
I will.
You don't like the concept.
But wait, I can see your toes. I mean,
this is a major point of contention between the two of you at this point, right?
I mean, hey, when people ask me, you're a podiatrist, feet, it's better than being a proctologist, right? better than being a GI doctor where you're doing endoscopes all day, really? It's like, sorry, I'll take feet over whatever,
Right.
Rectums any day.
I would suggest...
In future episodes, we got to find out where this came from.
No, absolutely. What? This is getting written down. I would argue the foot is the most contentious appendage as it comes to attractiveness.
Does
right?
anybody say, "Oh, I hate hands"?
Because it goes way the other way around.
I hate ears. I hate noses. No, but people will say, "I hate feet."
And
people will say, "I love feet."
It's 12:56. We've got Help Local with Marilyn Houlihan coming on at 1.
Yes,
we do. maybe Alex can sit in for that. I don't know. No, Alex and I are going to go debrief. So we'll
have our AAR, our after action review.
That's exactly
using military
right.
terms.
All right, this has been Bluegrass Bios. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I have. We'll
it's
be back
fun.
Next week, Tuesday at 11 to 1. This is WLXL LPFM Lexington Community Radio.